Welcome to the Drunk Guys Book Club, where books aren't just for school, where book clubs aren't just for women, and I'll be drinking a beer.
I'm Mike.
I'm Nate.
I'm Jimmy.
And we're the Drunk Guys, and this week we're reading Commonwealth by Ann Patchett. And I think Nate's starting with a beer.
I think I win this week, gentlemen.
Well, yeah, definitely.
So, okay, in the very first scene of the book, what was everybody drinking?
Gin.
With?
Gin and juice.
They were sipping on gin and juice. Yeah, that's correct. It was actually orange juice. And so they didn't have that at the beer store, but they had something close. They had grapefruit.
Aren't you glad they did?
There you go. This is, wow, really just, this is B43. Hit. India Pale Ale with grapefruit flavor. It's by New Orthodox Brewing, which might be new for us.
Is that the kind of brewery that digs a tunnel under the sewers to the other half of its building?
Yes, it does.
That could sound like this a Gaza reference for those not in the know.
This is the New Orthodox IPA series from Old Nation Brewing.
Oh. Isn't that what they call Native Americans in Canada?
First Nation, yeah.
Old Nations.
Anyway, it definitely tastes like grapefruit. This is kind of, and you know what? It's definitely not pink grapefruit, even though that's what's on the can. That's what's pictured on the can a little bit. It's really more like the yellow grapefruit. I don't know why I can tell the difference between those things.
Nate, you're really not helping yourself when we call you an old man, that you can tell us about the different varieties of grapefruit. I have half of one every morning. My doctor says it's good for my heart.
There's just various different kinds of shitty ones, and they're all just, how shitty is it? Because they all suck.
I like grapefruit.
It's Satan's
apparently because I'm old, and the beer is pretty good too.
So this was a patron suggested book. So thanks, Nathaniel, for suggesting this. No relation to Nate. So this book came out in 2016, and Ann Patchett's been around for a while, and I knew her name, but this is the first thing I've read of hers, and I really liked it. So it's kind of out of order time wise. It goes back and forth and focuses on different characters, and it's one of these like multi generational family things. But it focuses on family, or two families that become oddly blended, and what that's like primarily for the kids for a few key years of their lives, and how that kind of reverberates through the rest of their lives. So it starts in the 60s, where the kids are all little. It starts at the christening of one.
Yeah, it's the christening of the main character, Francie.
Franny.
Francine, who goes by Franny. Right?
Well, she's Francis.
Yeah. Francis, there you go.
Yeah, there's a whole thing because the dad's name is Francis, and he's like, I made fun of me with that name, so they said it was a girl name, and we had a girl.
Curse you with it, too.
Yep. And her parents, you know, are having a christening because they're, you know, having a nice Irish Catholic thing there, and it's in California, and there's a party at the house, and so they're eating fucking fresh orange juice, and this guy who knows the dad, who is called Fix for the rest of the book, I don't really remember why, comes over, and he wasn't even really invited to the party.
I assume it's just like a nickname for Francis, because Francis got him beat up a lot.
Yeah, it's something like that, because it's not their last name. For a while, I was like, isn't it like Fitzsimmons or something? Is it like another Irishy name? So then this other guy is Albert Cousins, which sounds like a bluegrass musician. But Bert Cousins is the, like, district attorney, assistant to the district attorney or something like that. So he knows in passing the dad, who's a cop, and he somehow gets invited. He invites himself to this party because he would do anything.
Or another guy invites him. It's kind of, or like he,
it's like, says
another guy runs into Bert in the hallway outside the courtroom and says, hey, I'm looking forward to that christening on Sunday or something like that. And no, he runs into Fix, and then Bert says, hey, and there's like, and the other guy says, hey, you should come too. And he just kind of shows up.
He's looking to get away from his wife and kids.
He will do anything. That's his character, to not spend time with his family. So he'll spend time with other people's families, which is an interesting choice.
And other people's wives.
Well, that happens right away. So really this whole opening scene is just introducing some of the characters and giving some backstory. But at the end of the scene, back in 1960, whatever this is, Bert sees Fix's wife, Beverly, and she's fucking really hot. And he's like, I want to fuck that. That will be my fix. And then he kisses her. And she, while holding her like 8-month-old child in the middle of this kiss, is cool with it. And she's like, don't tell anyone. Ha ha. Wink, wink. I'm bored. And that's the end of the chapter. And you're like, oh, wow. They both are not cool people. Because he left his wife at home with his pregnant wife at home with their 3 kids. Because he's like, I just fucking can't be around them. I hate them. Interestingly, he's not the Irish Catholic one, and he has 4 kids already. So that's introducing them. And you're like, well, okay, where is this going?
And then you spend the rest of the book trying to remember whose kids are who and what side they're on and who are they married to now or who's a step-sibling to who. And that was most of my reading experience for this.
Me too. I had it one way in my head. And then it goes to one of the like the one of the final chapters of the book where, and I was like, wait a minute, that isn't he their father? And I was like, oh fuck, no! I literally had it wrong in my head for almost the entire book.
It kind of only matters for a couple of the characters because ultimately there are 6 kids between these two failed marriages. Fix and Beverly have 2 daughters who are Caroline and Franny, and then. Bert and his wife was what, Teresa? They have they have the 2 boys, Cal and Albie, short for Albus Dumbledore. And then they have 2 other girls, and I forgot their names of the whole book, and they kind of didn't matter as much, but there was Jeanette and Holly, I want to say.
Holly, yeah. They were least important characters.
They don't matter as much. You couldn't have them all in there. It's only a 330-page book. But then... After them, you don't see, it's not in the book, the marriage, the affair and the marriages get ending in divorce. You just get some details of it later. But what ends up happening is Bert and Beverly move back to where he came from in Virginia, and Fix and Teresa, they're not together, they're just both divorced, they stay in Los Angeles. And the kids go back and forth between them as kind of a unit, at least part of the time. Because
it's like Teresa ships off her kids for the summer to Virginia.
Well, because if you couldn't tell, and maybe I'm tipping my hand here how I feel about these characters, that Bert's a piece of shit.
I think it's the consensus.
I mean, it is the consensus, but I have disdain for him from like page 2. And I was really hoping he would die the whole book, honestly. His wife is a single mother in the 60s with 4 kids, and he's just off. It's like, fuck off, bye. And she has to, get a job and pay for everything, and she really struggles. And then over the summer has the opportunity to get, 2 months of a break where she could only have to worry about work and bills and not the 4 other kids. So they spend the summers for 5 years or something in Virginia with Bert's new wife, their stepmother, with her 2 kids, and then Bert promptly fucking leaves there. And he's doing some bullshit law. He's doing like estates, not the most pressing of shit usually. And as soon as the kids come, he's like, oh, I'm swamped with wills to write. I have to go to the office every day. Bye. And he just neglects his new wife and children.
And so does she.
Yeah, she's also an unfit parent in a weird way that I was trying to figure out. Was like she like depressed or something the whole book because she just slept all the time and like
who knows
longed for something else.
She's barely in it, only really as a secondary character to everyone else's perspective.
Yeah, and even when you get to see her as an older woman at the end, she's not sympathetic. Maybe Ann Patchett doesn't have a high regard for adulterers.
Controversial.
I mean, some people are cool with it, clearly.
Yeah.
The ones that don't get caught. Like, I think it was pretty good.
So, okay, the book is definitely told out of order, like way out of order. So always there's no good way to really explain it. So I guess you get a bunch of this history. I want to add one other thing about Teresa sending her kids off for the summer is that one time she sent the kids without any clothes, without any luggage, just what they were wearing, because that way Bert and what's her name, would have to buy them all new clothes, all new stuff. That way they could come back home to California at the end of the summer with new stuff.
Also, because he's rich, because he comes from old Virginia money, which is definitely not slaves, but you know.
Oh, they still have a slave.
Yeah, they still do. They still have
a slave. There is still an old black mammy watching those children in 1968, who the kids just, she just like is in the kitchen. And I was really picturing Bubba's mom from Forrest Gump the whole time, because that's how she's described. She is like Ernestine or something like that was her name. And she sits in the kitchen and like hits bad children with her shoe or something like that. It was like a real stereotype of the old South. So he's got money, but he somehow like fucked his wife because he was a lawyer and in the DA's office and got a sympathetic judge to rule in his favor for everything.
Also, so he knew every lawyer and, you know, it was the olden times. Like, look at this woman trying to do stuff. Fuck her.
Yeah, even though later at the very end you find out he was the one that wanted to have lots of kids because he was an only child. So he wants to have lots of kids with this woman. And then he gets bored and cheats on her with a different person. And then he's like, fuck, I don't actually want to do anything with those kids. I'm not interested in that part. He's a scumbag. So yeah, I was like, good for her, man. That was a sweet move. Fucking someone's playing chess here, not checkers.
So I guess if we kind of tell it in chronological of what happens in the story, not the way it's told, but just kind of like the next big event is like, so the kids are going to summer in Virginia, every year they're going to Virginia for the summer is what I meant to say. And then they're kind of just bored and hanging out, but it is also kind of where they get to know each other. There's this one,
like 1968, and there was nothing for kids to do. So it's just go roam around outside.
And like the first big adventure they have is when they like go away for a weekend, or more like the parents take them away to some like lake lodge thing for the weekend or something like that. And the parents are like, we're sleeping in. Definitely don't come in and don't knock and come in. And so their kids are like, okay. So the kids, even though they're like ages, you know, teenager down to age like four or something like that, they're like, oh, let's just go. They're like, go get breakfast at the diner. And then they're like, what are we going to do all day? And so they decide to like walk to the lake in the middle of the heat. But yet Cal, who's the oldest boy, always knows where his father hides the gun in the car. So he always takes the gun and keeps it with him. So he always has like a gun with him, which ended up being not as important in the story as you think it would be. But
yeah, she totally un-Chekhov'd that gun. It was, you thought you like, mm-hmm. You're like, uh-oh, this is, cause like later on you found something bad happened in one of those summers and you're like, a kid got shot, right?
Nope. Well, they keep mentioning like, you know, Cal died. And you're like, oh, I'm sure that's a, we'll find out how later. It's like, oh,
dumb shithead shot himself or something.
Not right about now. The gun.
And it says something about the gun is just not explained. So
yeah,
I'll just tell the part now. So what happens is like
big climax
in one of the later, you know, that then in a slightly later summer. Oh yeah. One other thing that they're doing is so like Cal has a allergy to bee stings. He always has to carry Benadryl with him. But
he's too cool to tell the kids about that. He just, for some reason, has a baggie of pills and they never question it.
And then he
he's
just
a proto gives, drug dealer. Okay.
They keep giving the pills to Albie, the like 4-year-old kid, just to make him shut up and go to sleep. That's really what they want. Because, you know, they're too cool. They don't actually want to take care of this little kid because the parents are like not doing it either. So they just keep drugging him. That's also foreshadowing.
He gets a taste for it.
In a you know, summer of probably, it doesn't ever say what year, but call it somewhere around 1970 or something like that. They're in Virginia and they're out on the farm or out like, I don't know where they are. But anyway, Cal gets stung by a bee and dies. And like the kid, now the adults are like away or something like that. The housekeeper is there, but she's not really watching the kids. So it's really the kids are all just kind of outside together and he gets stung by a bee.
The dad is cheating on his new wife with another woman at the time. He's 2 hours away.
Oh, right. He's claptoning.
Yes. Oh, well, but without the song.
Well, he didn't have the song when he was doing it either.
That's true. But, you know, he was getting laid lud. Clapton was, when his fucking kid fell out of that window, wasn't he with another woman already?
Yeah. His kid died, and he left her with the babysitter, left the window open because he was banging another lady.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
You hear the Anthony Jeselnik joke about that? He's like, I have a son. He died the same way as Eric Clapton's son did. For inspiration. Like, oh, dark. Man. Dark. It was like,
careful.
25
Eric,
years
Eric Clapton like, doesn't like dark things either.
No. No, he does not.
Or vaccines.
That's unsurprising.
Yeah. So I got a shot from the sheriff. The working title.
I refused a shot from the sheriff.
So, okay. So Cal dies. But it's not really... And in the book, because this happens somewhere right in the middle of the book where it happens, but yet the narrative does not actually tell you what happens. It just kind of leaves a bit of a mystery. Because you know that there's... That the kids all say, like, okay, here's our story. We have to get our story straight. Led by Caroline, who's the smart one, who does go on to be a lawyer.
She turns full fixer.
Yeah, and she's like, so he was out by himself. We didn't notice him. We didn't see him there. And when by the time we found him, he was dead. And nothing about the gun. That's just like, you hear one thing about the gun, and then it's like, wait, what? And but it's not explained any further at this point in the book. So you're like, wait, what? Huh? That's weird.
And you find out much later that really what happened is that the kids, like, he was being a dick, right? He's a 15-year-old boy stuck watching his younger siblings and step-siblings, and he was in a shitty mood, and they were being annoying kids to him, because that's what kids do.
And he had given his way all his Benadryl to Albie.
He gave a toddler 4 Benadryl.
Which everyone would... was, all the kids were in on it. They hid him. They hid him in a room under towels.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Like, she's going to be cooking all day. She's not doing laundry. Put him down there. And then he like went to smack the girls because they were like singing a song to annoy him. He's telling them to stop. And then they all scattered. Like, and he's like, oh, which one do I go hit first? And then he got stung by a bee and fell. And they're like, oh no, he's just faking it. So then when we come over there, he'll fucking hit us. And then they let him sit there for a half hour on the ground before they realize, like, this is wrong. At which point he was fucking dead. But so they lie about that part. They didn't want to admit that they watched him die. And
but he also still had his father's gun in his, like...
They were more worried about that part.
Yeah, and they were like, we're going to go hide. We'll put the gun back where it's supposed to go. We'll just pretend he never had it. So that's kind of also the conspiracy, but...
If you're allergic to bees and you take Benadryl, would that actually save you?
I mean, it might. It would make it so you could
delay it.
You could get to the hospital.
Okay.
Probably. I mean, I think the EpiPen is probably better, although I'm pretty sure you're supposed to also call an ambulance even
if
you have
you take
to
an
EpiPen,
that's,
oh, yeah, you are.
You have to go. It's like your heart's going to explode. You're going to just die later, but like you have to go now to get the real treatment. It's just a way to buy time. But like if you have a shellfish allergy, like, oh, my throat's closing up, would Benadryl
work? It's
going
to be pretty hard to swallow a Benadryl.
You got to snort it.
Yeah, you have to mush them up and well, I need a $20 bill to...
But isn't it hard to breathe? Wouldn't that also not work?
That's why at restaurants when people get, you know, shellfish allergies, it's really awkward. They're like, I need this to go. And they're like, you sure you want to take all the... And then they... I mean, especially if it's the beginning of the meal. I don't want to leave that on the table. So you find this out
expensive.
In drips and drabs. I'm like, have you seen the price of prawn? You find this out throughout the book in like 3 different bursts from different kids' perspectives of what they remember and what they focus on in their memories, which is, I guess, one of the themes of the book. If I were taking a class on this, I would say. But I'm not, and I hate talking about themes of books. So then... That's like the big thing of their childhood. And then later on, like that basically contributes to Beverly and Bert divorcing. Like they blame the death of the son, but really they just, it's not because of their grief. It's because Bert was a fucking philanderer and was cheating on his wife when their son died. And he blamed her, like that she was negligent somehow, even though.
It's woman duties.
Yeah, he is a real scumbag. But like his negligence of like literally being 2 hours away fucking his secretary, that didn't count. So they split up. And then the kids are kind of split apart again because now there's no reason for them all to be together. But they keep in touch in weird ways. Like, I guess, you know, I don't know. I'd never had a bunch of step-siblings and then our step-parents divorcing it, because that normally is just the beginning of weird porno scenes I watched recently. But they're like, no, you're my stepbrother.
No, they got divorced.
Oh, so it's cool now? Oh, but it's not as hot. Never mind. And then the next scenes are all... Well, then there's like two other timelines in the present, or closer to present day. One in, like, I guess the 90s, and then the present day of 2015 or whatever.
So it jumps forward to the 90s, where Franny is a cocktail waitress at a hotel bar in Chicago, and she has dropped out of law school. She was in law school, but then dropped out in her third year, I think. So she made it most of the way through law school, and so knows a bunch of law, although I think that's a lie. I think law school is famous for not preparing you to be a lawyer at all. It's really about the theory of the law and not about how to actually do lawyering, as far as I've heard. Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, you learn everything at the firm you work for, right? Isn't that the story? Idea.
So anyway, she's a waitress. She's a cocktail waitress. She actually loves literature. And so when a famous writer walks into the bar, sits down at the bar, and she's like, oh my God, it's
Leon Posner.
It was forgettable. So
Chosen. That's how I remember. Something with a P. And the dad certainly remembered later.
Anyway, the name was very forgettable. Also a theme of this book.
Mm.
But anyway, so he walks in. He's older. She's like, you know.
She's 29 or something like that.
Yeah, and he's probably in his 50s or something.
No, when she
like
meets
that.
Him, she's like 24. And he's damn near 60.
Yeah, but he's famous.
With her, and he's cool and charming.
And, you know, she loves his, you know, books, and he flirts with her, and he's like pretty slick, and he gets super drunk. Partly is like he wants to talk to her, so he keeps buying more drinks. And I did notice during the scene, like, wait a minute, it kind of seems like you just had a double scotch 5 minutes ago. You sure you want another one? And he does. So anyway, so he's like super drunk, and he's like, oh, and it's the end of the night, you know, it's like 2 a.m., and they're like trying to leave, and he's like, you need to help me get to my hotel room. And she's like, I can't do that, because by law, if I do that, everyone's going to think I'm a prostitute, you know, or that I'm, you know, or that what I'm doing is promising you sex for a bigger tip.
I'll give
different
you a
different things, Nate.
So she's like, I can't. But he's like, no, I'm really drunk. I need your help getting in the elevator. She's like, okay, fine. I'll help you. And then he's like, what's your room number? I have no idea. Not helpful. But eventually they find his room, and she like just kind of puts him in his room and like puts him in the bed, and he's instantly asleep. She's like, okay, I'm leaving.
No, he's like, stay with me. And she's like, I'll just watch. It's weird. Like, she's so into him. But then it just cuts off. Like, oh. What happened there?
And then weeks, months later, she gets a phone call at the bar, because they didn't have, still like the early 90s. They didn't have cell phones yet. So she gets a phone call at the bar, and she's like, oh, and it's the author, Leon Posen. And he's like, hey, I'm supposed to give this book talk over here in Iowa. Can you come be my date for the... No, but he doesn't say, I'm giving a book talk. He just says, I have to go to this dinner party, which is an obligation of this, like, one semester college course program I'm teaching. Will you be my date? And she's like, okay. I was like, I'll buy you. So he buys her a bus ticket, and she goes there. And it's just like, oh, no, he's giving a talk about his own book and invited her to be the date. Meanwhile, he has a wife. Back in California.
Well, they're estranged and trying to get divorced, and will spend the rest of their lives trying to get divorced.
And don't manage it.
Nope. But, you know, she goes on the date with him, and it kind of cuts ahead, but they become an item. They're dating. They're together. And the next thing we catch up with them, it's been 5 years, and he just put out, like the year before or so, his newest book called Commonwealth. It's a book within the book. And it's about...
This book inceptioned itself.
It does, yeah. It's bookceptioned. It's like, what's that bottle that you can't make in three dimensions? Like the Klein bottle or whatever? It's like one of those.
Something like that. Thing.
Yeah, so she tells him about her childhood and about Cal dying and about the parents getting divorced and the mushing of the families. And he's like, I'm going to write a book that's kind of like that. Is that cool? And she's like, I don't know. And he writes it, and it's a huge bestseller, and like just misses winning the Pulitzer, and it's all fucking awesome. And then she realizes, like, oh, that was probably not cool to do. Whoops. But, you know, he's riding high again. He's got money coming in. He doesn't have to be doing fucking, you know, writer's workshops to pay the bills and pay for all of his children and their from his previous marriages. They're hanging out, and they spend the summer at a rented house, like a beach palace that belongs to a
movie star.
They're out in Long Island. They're in like Montauk. They're on Long Island, and it's a movie.
It's the house of a lady who would like to be in the movie of the book if they make it into a movie.
Yeah, but she never actually comes to this beach house. She lets them just use it, and it's just a rich mansion in Montauk, and of course all of like. The entourage types, the hanger-oners, like, oh, it's my editor and his wife and my publicist or, you know, my other art. People are just inviting themselves over and treating Franny like she has to be the hostess.
She's the help. Like she's still the cocktail waitress.
Yeah.
And everyone else is too important.
And they're just fucking leeches of people. They're really gross. They just show up and they're like, we're coming over for dinner on Thursday night, and then it's like Saturday after. It's like, so when are you fucking leaving?
Can you bring me 14 lobsters?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe Tuesday. Probably Tuesday. We'll see. Oh, I'm bringing... so-and-so's coming over. I'm bringing this other guy. And then I like when they bring over the writer, who clearly is trying to hit on Franny at one point. And he comes down in a bathing suit. He's like, where the fuck did you get that? Where did you... Because he was supposed to have just come over for dinner.
Than previous night, you know.
Yeah, and then
this is the following afternoon. It's like, wait, you have a bathing suit?
And she's like, you brought luggage? Like you packed? Like everyone is just unrelentingly fucking gross. And because Leon Posen is a fucking drunk, he's just like, what are you going to do? You're my muse. I stole your family's story. I hope you're cool with that again. By the way, we need gin. Bye. And he keeps promising a new book to everybody. He's living off the advance for the new book, which he hasn't even started.
Well, she doesn't even have an idea of what it's going to be.
Which I guess respect to him for that. Fuck the fuck the book publishing world then. They're dumb enough to give him money based on a non-existent book. They don't deserve that book if it manifests.
But over the course of that summer, one other thing happens that summer, which is an adult Albie finds out about the book. No, okay, so we got to go back a little bit. So Albie is
teenager.
He set his school on fire.
He's the child of two divorces.
Yes, and he was constantly given drugs just to like make him go asleep. Go, you know, just sleep so we don't have to watch you. And so he's definitely neglected in that way. And so when he's living back in California, especially after his brother dies, he falls in with sort of like the not good kids.
They're ruffians.
Yes.
They're not the worst kids, but they get into mischief.
And then they also like setting fires to stuff. Do anything destructive exactly. Except one day, on a Saturday morning, they sneak into the school building through an open window. And they're just kind of like, hey, it's actually like quiet in here and clean. And Albie, because he always has this like these matches on him and he's always just like lighting them just for fun, he drops a lit match into a trash can in the bathroom and it had all this like...
No, it was in the art room.
Art room, anyway, all this very flammable stuff in it. So yeah. Trash can just huge, huge fire.
It's a trash can fire that would make a bum weep. They're like, oh my God, that would heat so many alleyways. But instead, it just melts the polyester 1974 curtains in the classroom and everything is engulfed in flames instantly. Which makes sense. I mean, the art room is a very flammable place. It's just like oil pastels and paper. Yeah, they paper.
Said the trash can and was construction full of oil-soaked yeah. rags, which are, you know, explosive.
It's a Molotov trash can.
Pretty much.
So
he burns down the school and gets expelled. Dummy.
And gets expelled, and then there's like a big gap in his story, but he becomes quite a ne'er-do-well, and they don't really tell you, but because he kind of shows back up at one of the sister's houses, and he's like, I need a place to stay, and he offhand mentions that he was on doing heroin, and he finally kicked the drug, and he's staying on the couch of his sister, one of the other sisters that he didn't really hear about. Oh, yeah, in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Can I just say that this book has a lot of very cliche elements to it? And then when it was like, oh, yeah, and when...
The
and when
tiny apartment in Williamsburg?
And then was like, oh, and we're... And he, I, you know, when it goes from the sister's perspective, and which you haven't seen any other place in the story. It's just like a brand new character. It's like, and I'm here living with my husband in Williamsburg. I was like, oh, you know, like Virginia, right? Because, you know, the other part of the book took place in the Commonwealth of Virginia. And then it was like, oh, Williamsburg, Brooklyn. And I was like, oh, fuck. That is just kind of just very cliche. That's all. Not only that, though, my understanding is that, you know, Brooklyn, especially Williamsburg, got super cool in like the 2000s and stuff. But like in the early 90s, it was really not a great place. In fact, a lot of Brooklyn was heavily gentrified between the 90s
well, I
and
think
the 2000s.
At this point, it's no longer the 90s because the end of this chunk is when he discovers this book that's been around for a little while that he didn't know about.
But it's
so maybe it's a little bit later.
He's going to go to... It is still the later 90s because he's going to go to the summer house and confront the author.
Yeah, so the time frame is not clear, but I feel like... Williamsburg wasn't the great place to live.
It wasn't great, but it was, I mean, it wasn't terrible. It was just, it wasn't cool, but it wasn't like dangerous.
That was Bed-Stuy.
Yeah. That was next near it was like not a place like you'd want to live. But back then it was like fine, but there was no reason to really go there. It just, it wasn't hip to be a square.
So anyway, so he comes back to the story, and while he is just like, you know, living on the couch of his sister's in his sister's tiny apartment. And he's like, finally kind of gets a job and he's getting his feet back under him. Someone like loans him a book and the book is called Commonwealth. And he reads it and goes, huh, this is really familiar. And then he figures it out and he ends up tracking down Franny without telling her. And then just shows up at the beach house, the Montauk house. And so he hasn't seen Franny in many years because he kind of like disappeared from everybody's lives. And he just kind of shows up and he's like, what the fuck? And like maybe hits the guy, maybe doesn't, hits the author. But Franny's like, no, stop. Don't call the police. And then sort of like the next chapter is Franny like, yeah, that's when our relationship soured. It was over that summer. And it was also partly because she's being treated like, you know, a servant. And also partly because her brother, she feels bad that she told the story and that her family now has found out.
But she didn't, you know, she realized what she liked was being listened to by the famous author and feeling special. And she didn't really mean for him to take that and then, you know, write about it for the rest of the world. She was just telling him. But she was so...
She spent her entire childhood getting physically abused by her older sister whenever she spoke.
Right, that's why she's so compliant with everything. So when the dick bags are over there demanding, you know, her cook every meal and not helping in any way at all, she just sucks it up and does it because that's what she did as the kid. All the kids kind of fall into various cliche kid roles throughout the book, you know? The ne'er-do-well druggie, the overachieving learner kid, the one who gets beat up all the time.
The dead one.
The dead one, yeah. Historically, that's most kids.
Almost all of them.
Actually, pretty much all kids in history are now dead.
Most of them, yeah.
Almost all of them. Like, the ones alive today, they're the minority. They're,
by a lot.
The clock is ticking. So he's like, what? I was inspired by your fan. It's based on a true story. He never like takes responsibility. Like, oh, that
based
that
on the novel Push by Sapphire.
Yes, this is the novel Commonwealth, based on the novel Commonwealth by Ann Patchett.
Dedicated to Ann Patchett, yeah. So the final, you know, we've told this in a different order than the book tells it, but so finally you get to like the third time frame of the book, whereas now everybody's old, where essentially the parents, they're now very old and dying. So first, and this is where I got to the end and I was like, wait a minute, who is this? whose kids are they? Oh God, whose kids are whose is kind of like what I was thinking. So one of the old guys, I think it's
Fix.
Fix. He has cancer and his kids are like, you know, bringing him to chemo. He's old now. He's like in his
really just
or
Franny.
Something like that. Yeah, Franny, but also Caroline is helping a bit. And they're taking the chemo, and also, like, he's, like, telling some stories about stuff, which is how you get some of the earlier scenes. And then they take him, then the movie, this is many years later, the movie of Commonwealth is coming out, and it does not star, no, it does star the woman?
No, she's too old now.
No, she, yeah, because it took...
Because Posen's wife fought him for the divorce, and so he held out, and basically... He had to wait for him to die for her, which wasn't that many years after he split up with Franny, for her to get the control of his estate and then sell the rights to make a movie, to make the movie. So, but in that time, the actress who had that, I was like, she went from being, you know, the star of romantic comedies to, they say something like, being so old she can only be cast as like the mean CEO. Or like, she's too old to be a witch now.
Wizened senator.
Wizened senator. That is a great man. I think that's one of the members of GWAR. It's one of the backup guys. Sounds like a GWAR word.
So the father, it's the movie is coming out on his birthday, and he's been like fighting cancer for now a couple years, and everyone is like, this is going to be the last birthday. And he's like, you know what? I want to go see this movie. And everyone's like, no, Dad, it's a bad idea. And he's like, no, I get what I want. So, he's not being mean about it. It's like, that's what I would like to do. So they go, and even though he can, like, you know, not even walk, they, like, you know, they leave halfway through, though. But he does say something like, you know, I got to see that handsome actor play me in the movie. And that's what it was for. And so they kind of, after they leave the movie, they get a phone call. And it's from Teresa.
No, it's from Albie.
No. Oh, it's from Albie. And they said, could you, like, Franny, please go check on my mom, Teresa. Please go check on my mom. She's having some sort of trouble, some sort of issue, but I'm not there. I'm going to get on a flight and go there, but I'm not there right now. Could you check on her right now? She won't, like, call an ambulance. So she's like, oh, okay, we'll go. It's like, I'll go. And the dad is like, no, let me go with you. Because he's like, never met this woman, even though
They met one time.
Oh, because she called him to say, please get my son Albie out of jail. He just burned down the school. That's what he does.
Basically, yeah. Yes, he meets her when he brings Albie home, and they talk about kids for, they have like a one afternoon just shooting the shit for a little bit.
And this is, you know, post-divorce, so like through everything, they still hadn't met this one time. And he's like, she was kind of a nice lady. I'll go check on her. What else have I got to do?
It's also a nice distraction that he's not going to be the sick one potentially for a minute.
Hmm. So they go to Teresa's, you know, because they're all in California. They go to Teresa's, and then she's like not feeling well, but she's pretending like she's fine. And they're like, no, let us bring you to the hospital. You're having a thing. And so they bring her, to finally convince her, bring her to the hospital. They bring her, and the hospital's like, okay, we're going to take care of her now. And she's like, yes, I'm very tired. Everybody just go home. Thank you for bringing me. But then she dies during the night.
Like a bitch. But she was trying to die. It was like 3 days. She was like, all right, I'm going to die now. Cool. That's all right. Let me write a note. And she writes like, bye. Love mom. it's not a very heartfelt note she leaves.
Jeez. There's a lasagna in the fridge.
And then Is that the end of the book?
No. Then it comes back. She's alive. It's like Pulp Fiction. All of a sudden, she's alive for some reason. And there's a whole passage about the time she visited her other daughter, who's been living in a fucking monk, a Buddhist monk retreat in Switzerland, of all places.
Yeah. Where all the Buddhists are.
Because if there's one thing that helps you get to enlightenment, it's vaults full of stolen Jew gold. So she's living in Switzerland.
It's expensive to be a monk.
It is. Only someone has to pay
for
the
fucking hurdy-gurdies. Take that vow of poverty. Somebody's got to pay for it.
Well, they do mention that they make all their money by carving walking sticks with a fish on them, and they're big tourist attractions.
Yeah, and if you put a fucking compass in the walking stick, you could charge double, and people will pay for it.
And it's made out of stolen Jewish gold.
It always points to the nearest vault of Jew gold, this compass. So it could tell you how far you are.
More like a dowsing rod at that point.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's dowsing. That's the dowsing rod. You buy two walking sticks, and they lead you to the stolen artwork that the Nazis hid in Switzerland.
Yeah, hid with much help from the local populace and their banks.
Look over there. Where there's nothing here. Just don't peek here.
But that's where she lives in this Zen retreat. And she's lived there for...
pray loving in Switzerland is basically
what's
happened.
Been there for like, what, 20 years? 15 years?
Well, because she was... This is... Fuck. Holly?
Holly, yeah, right? Holly. Yeah.
She was like... She was doing banking. Because
she's
banking.
The most holliest of them all?
Oh, shit. Yeah, the name... The nominative determinism.
No, the
but she was lady banking.
Nominative determinism.
What happened?
The ohm.
Nominative.
Oh god damn you. Gnome.
Ominative determinism.
So she was doing banking and she was all stressed, and the doctor is like looking at the abscess that's developed in her mouth because she's just gnawing on her fucking cheek all day with stress. And he goes, "You're gonna need medication." She goes, "I do need meditation." And he's like, no, fuck it. You need drugs, lady. Like, you're fucking wired. And she's like, okay, sure. And then she just gets into meditating because she's one of those all-in pipes. And so she goes from being the successful banking person to selling her belongings and joining this Swiss ashram where she makes walking sticks. Well, she does the accounting for them. But then it's just the time when the mom visited, and they kind of... I didn't know what to make of that section, right? They kind of, she sees her, the mom goes, Teresa's retired at this point, she's 70-something. She became very successful and has, despite having no help from Bert, paid for the house and has savings and you know, made money in her career and made something for herself. And now she goes to visit the daughter. And I guess maybe it was just to show that they have, like, all their relationships are kind of odd or interesting.
If I had to guess, I'd say it's, you know, she hustled her whole life to, like, provide for her kids and, you know, left. She did not ever really remarry. She went out with a guy for a little while, and then he died of, you know, plot. And then she gets a chance to, you know, really spend time with one of her kids for perhaps the first time in her life and get to know her and just chill.
Yeah, that makes sense. Cause there is a line there about like how she had this like feeling of seeing her of like that. I made this kid, you know, this came out of me, but now she's separate from me. And in one of her meditative states, she gets all like transcendental and watches her son's death.
Yeah,
and processes that.
I'd say from the, you know, pop culture definition of Buddhism is, you know, understanding the connection between all things, and, you know, this book is about family, but not necessarily the different dictionary definition of family. So these kids are step siblings. They've got 100, you know, step parents, and then there's that scene later on when Franny goes to, because Franny and Carol divvy up holidays with the parents. So Carol goes to spend Christmas with her dad, and Franny goes to see her mom, who's now married to a different guy. Now she has like three new stepbrothers that she doesn't give a fuck about. And, you know, some are cool, but who cares? They're like rich, old money people, and they're all trash.
And, I like it when she talks about how their three adult sons, you know, they're like her age-ish, I guess, and they're all married. And she goes, yeah, there's the one wife I actually like, but she's married to the son I hate. And there's the son I don't mind, but his wife really sucks. And then there's the one that I can't remember who's married to the wife I can't remember.
Yeah, I'm at that point, too, because there's so many fucking siblings in this. So, you know, it's about the way we connect with one another and, you know, the various relationships everything has. And nothing is truly independent of anything else. Everything's connected. Like a web.
Well, there is like an element in this book of like, that was the first domino that set off all of these other things, right?
Yeah. How did it get to this point? And it like it hops around a lot, but you have to fill in 80% of stuff because you kind of get them as kids and them as adults, and there's really not a lot of intermediary except Franny for a bit. But it is a lot of how did we get to here?
But the Bert inviting himself over to that party and bringing a bottle of gin leads to, you know, the mom at the fucking Swiss monastery with this daughter, and it leads to...
And the death of his son.
And the death of his son, yeah. And it also leads to, you know, the book being made into a movie about their lives by that guy, and the daughter doesn't really regret it, and she ends up marrying her college roommate after his wife dies. Like, there's another stepkid situation there. And yeah, there's a nice racist moment when her new stepfather thinks that her...
Who is senile, but also racist before he was senile, so now it's even worse.
Yeah, and her husband is some sort of, you know, subcontinent Indian-type descendant. His name is Kumar. Mm-hmm. And he's like, bring the luggage up, and then he goes to carry it up the steps. He's like, no! Through the kitchen, like the servant's butler's staircase. Yeah. It's like, you always have to tell them. And she's like, that's my husband. I'm married to him. And he's like, And he just hits a black person or something. But
meanwhile, her mother is still a very pretty lady who is completely ineffectual and just concerned with looking good.
Having a Christmas party. She's like, oh, I always have a big Christmas party. And it seems like a great idea, but then it's so much work. Even though they have, you know, people doing the work, she's all about keeping up these appearances.
And she stopped by Bert's, who's finally left all of his families in that he is alone.
And doesn't seem to care.
No, he's like, fuck, I should have done this way earlier.
Yeah. I was disappointed. I wanted him to be lonely at the end of the book. I wanted him to regret, but he never does.
The shitty people don't.
I know, but like that's why we have fiction, so we could think that shitty people get their comeuppance at some point. Even though that's not how the universe tends to work. It's nice to imagine.
But even though the book started with him, the book wasn't about him.
You know, he's barely in it. I mean, because he was barely in his children's lives.
He is the thing that causes the book.
He's the Dadguffin.
Dadguffin.
And then it ends with... it ends with that, right? Or it ends with, like,
the Christmas
Franny
party?
Thinking...
It ends with us.
Yeah, the Christmas party. Oh, God damn you. But Franny being like, oh, yeah, I remember this other weird thing, this random thing that happened with Albie when we hung out together and he was really high and we were just, you know, open and shared. Like, he said he missed his mom to me.
Oh, yeah.
And I never told Leon about that. I meant to, but I never did. That was just a thing for me, I guess. The end. And we totally left. I can't believe we left off when... Elderly Fix keeps referring to Leon Posen as, quote, the old Jew.
Just, he was a cop.
He was an Irish cop from the 60s. Yeah, I think that was the nicest thing. That was him cleaning it up, I'm sure.
That was the censored version, yeah.
Ann Patchett's editor was like, come on, you can't put that in there.
You can't insult all of the Irish people by... They couldn't all talk like that, could they? It's like, oh, yeah, They do. So,
everybody likes this book a lot in the internets, right?
I loved this book. I thought it was great. I really enjoyed it. I didn't actually look up reviews for it. I don't even know what it got on Goodreads, but I really
liked it. We got recommended it by Nathaniel because he said, like, it's kind of like well-regarded lately, even though it came out
eight years ago.
So well-regarded, but yet is ultimately quite cliche, I think is sort of what he was saying. I felt like...
Shallow and pedantic.
Okay, we've read a lot of really shitty books, and so this was, like, actually pretty nice. It was. However, I felt like the characters were definitely not two-dimensional. Like, you definitely, like, they had a lot of life to them, and they felt good. However, you kind of didn't get very much from any particular character. Maybe besides Franny. I guess you get more from her. But you kind of don't get a good story, maybe with one exception. You don't really get a good story from any of them.
That was what I thought. Yeah.
Yeah, there are just kind of so many characters. And many of them, like, even in that very first scene, you, like, meet a couple of people who do not many people who do not reappear at all. Like, there's this whole long thing with, like, pastor guy and the girl who's Beverly's, the hot girl's sister.
Oh, Father Joe Mike.
And
Father
he's
Joe Mike,
like,
yeah.
And you meet that character, and then you meet some of the other cops, and everyone's like, blah, blah, blah. And it's really just to set the scene for, like, meeting the other two. But you don't know that at the time, and you're like, okay, I got to remember this character, got to remember this character.
They do bring back, like, them, a lot of those characters, like, in passing, like, oh, did you hear? You know, you got to do this thing. Like, oh, Father Joe Mike's not a priest anymore because he ended up banging that lady at the party.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what's her name, is married to a priest now, but, you know, yeah. That definitely happened.
It's like background noise.
Well, you definitely could picture these characters fully. You definitely could. You didn't get a lot of story about any particular character. It's like the whole book was just kind of people passing in and out, which I'm sure isn't quite fair because we've read so many shitty books that do this so much worse than this. So much worse.
Fair.
So this was still pretty good.
I thought it was good, but I would say, yeah, that's 100% my problem with it was, this is one of the rare books where it was like, I wanted more. I felt like there could have been a lot more in there. It didn't need to be 600 pages, but, you know, like after we were, like, books like this with, you know, the multi-generational family shit, like the Middlesex and the Corrections and We Were the Mulvaneys, like, they're long because there's fucking eight people and you kind of want to know what's going on. And certain parts of it, you think, oh, you know, Cal dying, that'd be like a huge issue and it's going to like be a big reveal. And it was like, actually, it kind of wasn't. It was just kind of whatever. And then everybody just does their thing. And maybe that's because that's kind of how it goes in real life to a certain extent. Not every death is massive.
If Cal had died in a more... A part of the book is at least the children hiding what really happened when Cal died. And
yeah,
the author
doesn't
tell you,
more of a conspiracy of sorts
until close to the end. Now, if so, you kind of have to wonder, like, what happened? Like, what if it was actually a lot crazier than just, oh yeah, we didn't believe him, which is pretty bad by itself. That is definitely pretty bad. But if it was actually somehow way worse, and the kids were hiding this dark secret their whole lives, and then the end, when the secret finally comes out, because it's shown in the movie or shown in the book and then in the movie, and then the mom finds out. I mean, I'm just picturing a way which that could have been a much more dramatic moment, you know, when somebody finds, like, you did what? Wait a minute. That could have been bigger, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, it could be that. I mean, even if it stayed exactly the same, it just kind of felt like everybody was like, oh, yeah, that sucked. Anyway, here's the rest of the book. It was like, I felt like it built up to a lot, and then everybody, you don't really get a sense of, I mean, I guess you could say that Holly fled because of, you know, maybe some trauma, I get that, but there's so much not in there. There's, like, decades missing, and it's just... I just wanted a little bit more.
You really only get one scene with some of these, with a lot of characters.
One chapter for all the other siblings besides Franny. And Albie is kind of a way to jump around to other siblings that aren't in it, but they're also side characters. You don't need to have full of all of them, but it did seem, I don't know,
thin.
I liked it, but I thought I wanted more of it. That was my only real criticism, is that I wanted more of it.
I feel like, and I read a review actually that said something similar. That was another writer's hands. This would have been a sprawling epic.
Yeah.
Right. You would have had.
It has all the bones for it.
1,000 pages. And there's a lot of characters and a lot of stuff that you could have done in a little time. I am, one, very glad she didn't, because it meant I got to read the book pretty quickly and I didn't have to be slogging through it for 2 weeks.
There's a fine line.
But I kind of liked it. I mean, I wouldn't say it's experimental. You know, but it is a little unorthodox to. It shows these glimpses of this half century of the characters. It's not the whole story. And it's, you know, how they're, not only is their family life was disrupted, but the whole narrative is disrupted as it, these little things here, as they're just like reminded of how these past events shape their present. And I thought it was, I kind of liked how she didn't tell you everything. I had to figure it out a little bit. No, yeah. It wasn't like a mystery where I'm like, who done it?
Yeah.
Like, what, you know, like, oh, it was in the billiards room. You know,
it definitely alluded to like some big thing that happened. And it was like, that's not that
watching
big a
thing. Your stepbrother or brother die is a big fucking thing.
Yeah. But they didn't even really didn't even go into that
as
much.
Yes, it is. But as a point in the story, it wasn't as dramatic. It felt in the middle like, oh, this is going to be some big mystery. And then it just kind of like at the end, it tells you much closer to the end. But it's like, oh, that's what you were hiding? Okay, I guess.
It's not even treated dramatically from the perspective of the characters. Like, it doesn't have to be like this grand reveal. But like, I mean, I don't remember if they're telling it in a flashback or... I think they're telling it in a flashback or like in a this is what happened kind of thing. We're not looking at it in real time. So I don't know. I mean, I did.
But what was the point of keeping it secret? So even if part of the story is we're not telling mom what happened, like, because she would be so bad. What's the purpose of the author not telling the reader what happened and letting that being revealed later? Like, what was the need for that?
It would have had the same effect.
You do have to build
suspense
in some way. There has to be something. To come, some climax.
So that, I mean, I agree. I think it should have been done even more, but there wasn't, because it wasn't a big payoff when you finally did learn about it, it kind of feels like, what was the point?
I would think maybe her point is that it's melodramatic to make it be such a dramatic thing in the plot, because I'm trying to find the quote. There's a quote later on when Holly... and the mom are talking, I think, and she's like, I thought when Cal died, like, that was it. But we're still alive. We still lived. Like, life goes on. And, like, that wasn't the defining moment of their lives. It's just this...
Yeah, it's not.
It's an important part of their lives. But their lives spiral, and they're like, you know, I said the billiards room, but they, like... ricochet off of each other throughout the next decades. They're different characters and their various trajectories.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, yeah, my thought on that would be, it's not, you know, it will affect you in certain ways the rest of your life, but it was like kind of built up to be like it was more so, whereas if the point is that it wasn't, it's kind of, I don't know, I'm just not trying to have it both ways, but it is kind of...
But the characters are affected, right? Like Holly... feels guilt about not telling the truth, or Karen, I forget which one, Franny, feels about not telling, and then when one of them finally tells, they're like, feel this tremendous relief that the secret, even though the secret was kind of dumb, and the parent is like, that wasn't your fault, man, that was, you know.
But yet, what I mean is, why did the writer choose to not reveal what happened in that moment until later to the reader? Because there's like this, there's the characters hiding it from the parents, but she could still have revealed it to the person reading the book, and it was just part of the plot that we're going to lie about it. What was the point of that?
I mean, if she gave that away in the beginning of the book, then reading those other chapters later would be kind of boring, wouldn't they?
No, you're still dealing with, you know, how it affected the kids, even though, you know, to varying degrees, it's not about that anyway. But, you know.
But in a book where, like, they're like showing the difference in time and recollection and shit like that, I guess having it be remembered or having it come out of different people's perspectives is part of it, right? I don't know. I feel like we're getting nitpicky about.
Yeah, but definitely
very small.
I mean, for sure. If that's really the only issue is, then it's pretty solid. Like, if we're just nitpicking because there's no glaring flaws. It's just I kind of wanted a little more, and some parts felt a little odd. But overall, I did actually, I liked it. I was just kind of, for once I was sad that it was just like, I feel like I'm missing a lot, which I very rarely get. Most of the time it's, oh God, this is too fucking long.
No, I agree. I would have liked more of this book. I really enjoyed it. I liked the way she wrote. I liked the character. I cared about the characters. I fucking hated the dad and Bert and Beverly really, really wanted bad things to happen to them. I was disappointed when they didn't. I want to read more of her books. I want to read some other ones.
Yeah, for sure.
Thanks for suggesting it to Nathaniel.
Yeah, thanks.
If you want us to do a book, you could just yell it at us anywhere we say in a second. But if you give us money, we'll listen much more quickly.
Money plus time equals fast?
I guess what we're saying is if money became more common and our wealth increased, we could do more books? No? Go to patreon.com/drunkguysbookclub to find out more. But in the meantime...
In the meantime, tell us what you thought. Send us an email to drunkguysbookclub@gmail.com.
Or follow us on Twitter at DrunkGuysBC.
Or go to Facebook and Instagram at DrunkGuysBookClub.
Or go to the Patreon thing. Or leave us a review. That'd be really helpful. A good one. Because they make me sad when they're bad and my pee-pee shrinks. No one's listening.
Speaking of good ones, that's where our reads are. Good reads. We're there.
And check out the Hopped Up Network, a network of independent beer podcasters. And thanks for listening.